podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool lost to Manchester United by 2-2. I am joined by Josh Williams, Ian Salmon and Joel Richards. And we are brought to you by Green King. Like every podcast over the course of this season, it is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. You can make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? Well, for one, it's got delicious food and lovely drinks, 900 of them across the country, so you're always within walking distance of one. And always, as we always say on the Anfield Wrap, regardless, football is better with people. So get everyone together for this Premier League running in an atmosphere worth sharing, my word. That was not my Old Trafford for 40 minutes yesterday. There was no atmosphere at Old Trafford, but we'll come on to that in a minute or two, for 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Anyway, it will include title showdowns. There will be European qualification, relegation six-pointers and European sport in general. The Green King Sport app will help you out with competitions, discounts, etc., etc. Manchester United 2, Liverpool 2. Josh Williams, Klopp out.
I've just seen that on the agenda there and I was thinking, where's he going with this?
Klopp out. I mean, obviously that's not the point. It is an utterly infuriating way to drop points. Yeah. I was infuriated by it when it was... The weird thing was, though, in the ground, so where the match is going on, there's people around you and people are losing their minds. I'm not, because the thing I'm thinking is, these are so weird. At any point, we could score not one goal, but two. So it's 2-1, and I'm thinking we can still get two. I think maybe we can get three. It's 2-2. It's 93 minutes when Diaz misses what he misses, and I think, not that there's one more chance in this for us, but there's maybe two, because they're so weird. So I've become more infuriated by results, outcome, aspects of performance since the final whistle than I even was in the ground, a ground which was for 45 minutes, 48 minutes, absolutely silent. Have you managed to reach a philosophical point yet? Because I'm asking on behalf of a friend.
I mean, the last time I was on this pod was on the back of the Man United FA Cup game.
Oh, yeah. Which correlation is not causation.
No, but it felt...
Your fault.
Correlation is not causation.
It felt similar back then, to be honest, in terms of the performance being pretty good. I think this performance was better than that performance as well. But
you're going to be nicer about them than I am.
But the players, mate, just in terms of both boxes, not really delivering for Klopp, funnily enough. And it's the second time again where Klopp, after the game, just indirectly basically says, once again, it's not on me this, you know, what can I do more here? I've coached the team to generate 28 shots. I think we faced 9, you know, dominated them for large periods, didn't face a shot in the first half. And you don't kill the game, and you make a mad error in the middle of nowhere. Just, it's just so frustrating, isn't it? At this point in the season, when you would hope that a team like this learns from what happened at this stadium.
It was different, though, I think. I think you said before it was better. I just think it was different in that I think during the period where the most dominant in the cup game, they actually don't create anywhere near as many opportunities, or even at times opportunities for opportunities. There's a lot of... I think they were knackered then, and I think there's a lot of them just moving the ball and sterile domination. This domination did result in opportunities. I think this is worth pointing out.
Yeah.
And it resulted in quite quality opportunities. But even then, the quality of the opportunity could have gone up another notch. And that, to me, is the frustration. It's that I think I do agree that the better, and certainly the better during the period where they're dominant. But I still also think, you know, firstly, the shots they get, they should be doing more with and better with. And they could also be creating better shots and better opportunities simultaneously, which is mad in a situation where they've had 19 shots before Man United have had 2 and got the equaliser.
Yeah, I think it was... Man United have this way about them where they're so nuts, so wild and borderline stupid that you kind of descend into what they are a little bit, and they can make you just as chaotic as they are if you let that happen. And I think in the FA Cup game, we allowed that to happen far too much for large periods. In this game, if it struck me as us being a bit more controlled for the most part, aside from a 15-minute period in the second half where we conceded twice, you know, Kwanzaa just kind of almost allows that to happen, almost with his mistake a little bit, but then we get control again. So I think we had a lot more control for me and similar opportunities to kill the game, but just didn't. And Man United take advantage of the few opportunities they do get, and just such a weird, crazy team that side. Just so annoying, mate.
You more philosophical today? I've been trying to be. So, ways to be philosophical. Neil Docking was having a good go last night. Old Trafford is never as easy for Liverpool as it should be. Nobody has more points than us right now. 7 games to go. The nature of other sides' runs. look back at the team between 2018 and 2020, look at the team in the 1980s, results at Old Trafford, etc., etc. This has been trying, Ian. I want to be quite clear, I am not succeeding.
I'm in a state of relaxed fury at the moment. I'm in a very pissed off philosophical mood. I've got this whole dichotomy going on in my head, and I don't know exactly where I am from minute to minute. I'm with Josh. I think that was a better performance yesterday in the FA Cup game. I thought we were better. I think when you say that the ground was very quiet, you're being very unfair to our away end, because I thought our away end was spectacular. It was just the United fans who didn't make a noise for 48 minutes.
That's what I meant, to be clear.
I wasn't there. Our end was great. It was fantastic. It was completely behind the game and making a hell of a lot of noise. I think, I've just been saying this on the way in, I think we partially played the occasion, the event, the status of the game and the jeopardy inherent in the status of that game rather than just playing the game. I think that was a team of lads who know that they had to be precise because everything they did was going to count. And by having to be precise, they managed to not be precise. They made all the wrong decisions all over the place. I think there's moments when Mo puts the ball over the bar because he's aiming so close to the top of the net and then just misses it completely. I think Old Trafford got in their heads before the game. I think
you have 15 shots in a ground and a half if they're in your head. This is the dichotomy.
Great shots.
But a lot of them were quite good. I mean, Szoboszlai's one-on-one.
Szoboszlai's great, it's a great save.
This is what I find difficult, because I want to say, in a way, I almost want to go, and Old Trafford's in their head. I think, if anything, they're almost too relaxed. Or almost trying to come over too relaxed. Like, I can't quite settle on this. I think they're all, or if maybe then it's like this triple bluff of, hey, we're not going to make it look like Old Trafford's in our heads, so we're going to do this, so therefore Old Trafford won't be in our heads. But then, I'm almost of the view that United's weirdness is more of a core problem than Old Trafford here, that United are such a weird team. But by all means, if you think it's United, Old Trafford in their heads, I just want to hear the arguments.
I think it's the whole thing. I think it's the event. I think it's the knowing that you need to win. I think it's the still being up with Arsenal on goal difference, as still being up with Arsenal on points as we start. I think it's the whole thing of being, we win this, we're top of the league. We win this, we're top of the league. And I think the FA Cup game, we were relaxed, we were complacent, and we went in with an attitude and swagger that we'd already won it. I don't think we did that yesterday. I think we were still trying to make the game win. I think heads, obviously, the 15 shots. But at the same time, I do think we were playing the event, and I think we were trying too hard to make things happen perfectly. And the things that we're trying too hard, as I said, I'm very confused on this whole thing, because
so am I, mate.
We're kind of like, at 1-0, if we score the second, we win 5-0. The game's over. The game is over if we get that second in the first half. It's over, and it's going to be a demolition. And then we've gone completely for 20 minutes, but then we're on top again and we're still doing the wrong things. It's our decision-making all the way through, and I think our decision-making has been predicated by what is at stake in that game.
I want to go to the start of the game. What was really interesting was,
I might just be talking shite.
No, I don't think you are. I think the stuff in what you're saying, that's really fair, and I think that this is where the shape of it is, and I think the game, in the end, goes through far too many twists and turns from Liverpool's point of view in terms of where sort of mind space is at. One of the things that struck me was, it being in the end, Joel, and I know you were there as well because I saw you on the concourse, was first and foremost the reaction of the Liverpool supporters to literally the start of the game. Like, the 2 minutes before the start of the game was the most, it was beyond stuff I've seen in a cup final. It was like, we've been waiting for this, we're relishing this, this is what we're about, we're going to do this here, this is where it's going to come from. And I thought that you then got to sort of see that with the players. And there's a couple of moments first half where Kwanzaa is a little slack in possession in the first sort of 15 or so, but it looked to me like the players had that as well. And that they had this moment of, no, we are going to absolutely impose ourselves here. And there's the early offside thing from Garnacho, and that sort of gets in people's heads. But I think that Liverpool, from 0 to 30, are pretty much about as good as you can be. Going to an opposition ground who's a top six club, who's a major rival, about as good as you can be. And then I just think the entire thing, when you're thinking about sort of where mentalities end up, does become that they just don't get the second. Like, and I think that they're right. My point is, I was before the game, I was like, you've got to start well, they've got to start well, they've got to start well. 0-30, they couldn't have done much better against a really unconventional football team. That, to me, says that the mentality was right, 0-30, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
And I think it was, and I agree with you there. We had to go and impose ourselves on the game, which is what we pretty much did. So the plan, if that was the plan, we carried it out to a T. So the first half an hour is some of the best that you've probably seen from them in the last couple of months. You know, you'd argue, and that's considering the performance we had against Man City over the whole piece. So we go to Old Trafford, and how many times in our lifetimes have we gone, apart from the 5-0, how many times have we gone there and seen a Liverpool side dominate as much as that? And the answer's probably none. So it adds into how frustrating and how even more annoying is that we've let this game slip from our hands, and it does feel like a defeat. Like you said, yeah, we lost 2-2. I felt like that myself, even though obviously I'm glad we got the points in the end because you're relieved, but you can't take any further satisfaction from that. It's a thank God we didn't lose, because had we lost, again, that's two defeats in the space of 3 weeks to them. And then what does it do to you for the rest of the running, especially the fact that you've got to go to Goodison? And again, I know we're going to talk about Goodison later on, so I won't talk too much about it now, but that breeds into its own complexity.
Massive pressure on the manager if he doesn't get a result in Goodison for me, Charlie.
But it has parallels with 18-19 for me, because 18-19 we go there and have the two aways against Everton and Man United, the two terrible 0-0 draws, and where we stink the gaff out in both of them.
But we don't stink the gaff out here for the this is why it's so, like, in many ways I'd rather they've just been a bit crap and got a draw. Yeah. If you sort of know what I mean. Like, if they've just been a bit crap and you know, you're able to, because you and in some aspects of the game they were a bit crap, and we'll come on to talk about that, but I'd almost just rather they just stank the gaff out, we get a draw and we all walk out of there. Yeah. The point is, I'm 25, I'm going, we're well better than these.
Yeah, and again, it's the whole, because whenever I've been to Old Trafford, I've never seen us win there. For some reason or another, I've always missed the wins.
So you not, Josh?
Well, possibly, who knows? But you talk about the atmosphere at Old Trafford. Before kickoff, it was weird. They didn't even play any music at one point. I remember getting up into my seat after seeing you, and before kickoff, it was like there was this eerie silence, not just from the crowd, but from even like someone at Old Trafford thought, oh, we can't. What sort of music should we play until this is the one comes on? Fuck all. It was a morgue atmosphere. Like, and obviously the pitch had announced as China's his best, saying the greatest club in the world and all that jargon that they say. But it was just like a funeral atmosphere until this is the one kicked
it's
in.
It's mad how much, by the way, the pitch side announcer sounds like he's doing Butland's at Blackpool.
Oh yeah.
It's honestly, this is the North. This is the North in all its glory. Hello. It's like a Peter Kay sketch. Go on anyway.
And so that all fed into it, because it's like thinking, God, this just feels all too much of a perfect storm for us to go there and batter them. And after the week they'd had as well, where they'd lost 5 points in the space of however many minutes in stoppage time in both of the fixtures that they'd had. So again, that's all feeding into it. And I was naturally nervous anyway, as I said on the post-match show Thursday night. I'll go over our record very quickly there. In our entire history of playing them away, nearly 130 years, we've only ever won there 18 times in the league. I think maybe one cup as well, so 19 overall. So historically, Liverpool don't do well at Old Trafford. It's like Everton at Anfield. And then, as I say, in my lifetime, maybe Josh's lifetime as well, we've only won there 7 times. So God knows how many.
You're not fucking cheering me up here, by the way.
But it's maybe one or two.
I'm on the verge of just going out and having a walk towards that river there. Go on.
So it's all feeding into it. And I looked at the stats this morning, and that's pissed me off further. You know, the way you're pissed off, seeing the fact that it was 0 shots, 0 on target in that first half, and looking at ours. Again, I'd rather have Man United have battered us that first half, and we were weathering the storm rather than they.
The first half, the key for me, Josh. Listen, it's a slack ball from Quanta, don't get me wrong. And by the way, I put it in my piece last night. It's a brilliant finish. I mean, it's a brilliant.
Yeah, he's the only player on the pitch who does that, by the way.
Yeah, oh yeah, because he's the only one who's, yeah, in loads of ways, he's the only player on the pitch who does that. Like, some of them are actually negative, if you know what I mean, but he does that. But they're such a moments team, and he's such a moments player. It's like the purest bit of moments you've ever seen. You know, but park that for a second. The first half, the key for me, because they have 15 shots. Some of them are actually really good opportunities. Some of them are actually relatively good shots. But A, the shots themselves on the whole do need to be better. But also B, the quality could well be better. And this is the oddness of playing them, because one, they do loads of really good chaos defending, because fucking hell, they're used to it.
Yeah.
They're doing it every week. They're really well practiced in what you do when the situation's gone to shit. They're doing it every single week. But also, number two, I think that's the one thing that's sort of in our heads. There's a point where, for instance, Bradley is carrying it and he squares it when he should just go on himself and drill it. Mm. But Liverpool have obviously been having this idea of take another touch, don't get sucked in, etc., etc. But it's dead easy to say don't get sucked in when you're going to have so many shots and it's going to open up for you so many times, because sometimes you'll get sucked into doing the wrong thing because you're thinking, oh, let's move it one more time, but you can make the opportunity harder by doing that.
Yeah, the first half I felt was virtually perfect, really. I mean, you can't be much better than that in terms of especially just keeping them quiet, like containing that team who are nuts, got good individual players, speed, you know, ability when it comes to finding a pass in behind and things like that. To keep them quiet and to keep them to zero shots for a full half away from home is some doing. And we were absolutely on point, in control, with a lead up until Kwanzaa's, you know, mistake. Another thing with that as well, people naturally putting it down to inexperience. I've seen 32-year-olds make that same error. You know, that's not a youngster thing. That's just one of them things that
it
just
shit happens, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah.
It literally is.
But this is why you've got to be 2-0 up.
Yeah,
shit, exactly. Especially against them, given the sort of, that's why you've got to be 2-0 up.
Yeah, but the chaos defending point is a good one, because like when you are in on their back line, like I think we had another 5-on-2. By the way, remember a couple of weeks ago we touched on that. I think it was a 5-on-2 a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. We had another one. And it was all going very well up until Nunes squares it to someone in the stands, I think, or something like that. But just that kind of attacking is it. You don't usually get them opportunities every week. And I think in certain attacks that we had, if you'd never seen football before, you'd think the game involved walking the ball into the net as opposed to just taking a scruffy shot. Or against Man United, you need to accept the scruffy shots. There was a point where Diaz, I think it was that 5-on-2 where he hits a backstick to Nunes. I think Diaz can shoot, and I think someone who's just a bit more...
It's the angle he's at when he scores against Arsenal to make it 2-0 in the Cup.
Yeah, it's the angle he's at as well when he scores to give us the lead at Spurs and it gets ruled out. The VAR, you know, shambles. He's in a similar position there as well. So, I don't know. They make you overthink and they make you make stupid decisions and that. But even still, that number of shots, that number of touches in the box and things like that. And it was the same at Anfield. It was the same in the FA Cup. You do just usually win those games and to not... It is just mad. It's a crazy, crazy team at the minute, I keep saying it.
Do you feel like, though, at times, you're talking about those chances there, Josh, there was quite a few instances, first half and second half, where it felt like we were going through the middle, but we were getting crowded out. I feel like, you know, we didn't really push too much on the centre-back pairing that they had, you know, Maguire and that Cambuale, because that was only his second Premier League start. So there was a chance to hit them and attack them. But, as I say, there was certain breaks of play where we were going at them, and for some reason we're going through the middle, but United were getting everyone back, and then the back there and Liverpool are just getting crowded out, and as you say, there was the wrong options were getting took at the worst possible time, where, you know, go for the shot yourself, but then they're going for the extra pass, and then there was that one in the second half, I think that's the one you're mentioning about Nunes, where it swerves across goals, doesn't it? So there was times like that where it was just they're going through the middle, but maybe go out wide a bit more, or go to Robertson, or go to Bradley when Bradley was on, or even in the second half when Gomez is playing way wide right, and Elliot in particular, but they're just going through this middle and they're just not picking the right passes.
Yeah, they're so determined at the time to create that clear cut shot, and when you're facing a team like United, just the way they seem to defend, their willingness to just retreat and drop the defensive line with you is it's just different. It's just quite weird facing that team. And I think in certain other games, Liverpool can attack, and the optimal decision is just clear in most moments. But I think against United, you've almost got so many options that you take the wrong one, or you take an extra touch, or far too many extra touches, or the ball will come to you in the box, and rather than controlling it and then shooting, you'll shoot with your first touch, and it'll go over the bar or something like that. Just a load of, you know, curious decision making like that. And you know, I've seen people touch on, like, Jota would have scored 3, you know, things like that. And listen, he might, but Jota, for me, is not that dissimilar to the likes of Salah and Nunes and that, in the sense that he can be a scruffy kind of forward in his nature. I know he's quite cold when it comes to his finishing as well. But just that kind of, I don't know, I just think it was just such a weird game with that team. And I think we've had 87 shots against them across the 3 games this season. And we've scored 4 from open play, which is a very low conversion rate. And yeah, it's just weird, mate. Witchcraft.
I think we're being far too kind to the Man United at the moment. I think we keep describing them as weird and chaotic and...
bad.
Yeah, they're just shite.
Yeah.
They're the best shite team I've ever seen.
They're currently clinging on better than most shite teams, but they did start the day 22 points behind.
That's what we should be... But the shite? I mean, there's a key point in, there's loads of things to do. That's the stuff that a bottom 10 team does. But they are sixth, and we haven't beaten them all season.
And they're getting away with it somehow.
They have faced more shots than Luton.
So this is all of this.
31 games more shots than Luton.
Well, I think you were the first to point this out on Twitter. They were doing 20 shots a game, repeatedly.
Well, no, they're averaging since the turn of the year. Now they'll be averaging something like conceding 20 after yesterday, conceding something like 25-26 shots a game.
Yeah.
They are the best shite team that's ever existed. It's remarkable. Like, fair play to them. Take your hat off to the Denzians of Manchester.
Is this a masterclass of shiteness by Ken Hag? Has he designed a team to be... They know they're so bad that they're going to go out and be appallingly bad, and they're just going to confuse people, because they're clearly confusing the hell out of us. I think this is where I'm getting the idea that it's in their heads, because everything they did had to be more precise, and there were no... It's the same thing we've done quite a few times this season, where we've taken the extra touch when we should be shooting, or we shot when we should be taking the extra touch.
But they concede 30-odd shots to Brentford. Brentford only score with the last one.
Yeah.
They score three at Chelsea. Chelsea themselves are weird at the minute, don't get me wrong. As I say, they sit sixth. They do sit sixth in the table, and they will almost certainly finish sixth if you look at the results from this weekend. It doesn't look like anyone's going to come for a run at them. So this is why it's weird, and this is why I don't want to just sort of go, they are shite, don't get me wrong, but they're so used to being this bad, they're quite good at it. Mm. This is what I mean. Like the brilliance of blocks, the brilliance at last-ditch blocks, because they're doing them every week.
They're a Wimbledon 88 version of shite. Clearly sort a very of. Bad football team, but managing to survive.
And also, they're still a negative goal difference, aren't they?
The minus one, yeah.
Yeah, and then you look at the home defeats they've had this season, because I've covered most of them, and this is what pisses me off further. They got battered at home to Brighton early on. Bournemouth have battered them there 3-0. Palace, under Roy Hodgson, got a 1-0 there. And then Fulham, not too long ago, Fulham were by far the better team over the piece, I should say that. But Fulham, they got a late winner in about the 97th minute, something like that. And again, it just feeds, and I'm looking at the homes that you've had this season. I'm thinking, why couldn't we do it in all that? And why haven't we beaten a team in the top six yet, away from home as well? It's just, it's honestly baffling.
Keep moving it along a little bit. It's a different game at 1-1, Joel. We're not very good at 1-1, to be honest with you, into 2-1. But then I think that, you know, I think we're quite good at 2-1. And 2-1 leading into 1 point being better than zero. Again, there's no difference in the last Elliott shot, as far as I'm concerned, to the Palmer shot in the game against Chelsea. But the Palmer shot deflects in, our one doesn't. Say what you want, it's out the way now.
Yeah, I think we had a very...
Actuating the positive there.
I think it's actually a terrible half an hour from us, if I'm being honest. Yeah. I think he, even from the first couple of minutes in the second half, I just thought there was something about them, and I think maybe did it feed into the whole, God, we're only 1-0 up at half-time, yeah. You know, Rod said 2-0.
They have a couple of chances, though, at 1-0 in the second half as well. They get in a couple of times. Because why wouldn't you get in? You're going to get in, so they get in.
And to go a bit further, like you say there, got decision-making, you know, all this, you know, not finding Szoboszlai. Even those times where Szoboszlai was countering and he's charging through the middle or there's a break on. And again, wrong decisions.
He should have shot them. I know what you're talking about.
And again,
overthinking it, because it's so easy.
Yeah.
You're just like, I've got acres of space here. Why is no one closing me down? I've got to pass it.
There must be something wrong in this. And they know something I don't.
It's like he's going expecting a trap door to just take him onto the pitch or something.
But even like the saves Onana makes throughout, first and second half, you know, I'm looking at it and... They're not hardly last gasp saves, but he's part of the theatrical nature of this Manchester United team, where he's making saves, and it's as if he's making...
That weird diving save he makes, so that you could have just stepped over in court.
Yeah, and he's producing, but like in the goalkeepers union, you know, he's making all these mad saves where he's acrobatically, you know, pushing them out for corners, and, you know, like even with the Elliott shot, you know, you mentioned the... Yeah, gloves made of Vaseline. You think, you know, he's got Vaseline on his gloves, pushing them out.
Sorry, and then, can I just do something on physics here? Doesn't Vaseline make things slip?
That's what I would have thought.
So why would you do that?
Yeah. So rubber, on the gloves. You know, it's, but even like with that Elliott shot, it's just praying for, as you say, the deflection, or even, you know, an Onana slip in the worst possible moments. And when that free kick went in, I just knew, right, this has got to go. This is the last chance. And it just came to him. And even like a bit more power on the shot from Elliott, I don't know.
It could have spilled, could have done whatever, and gone from there. He spilled one that Salah should score from. That's a 2-1. Salah should score from that, puts it over the bar instead. Diaz, the Diaz late chance, I suspect, might have been ruled out if it had gone to the video assistant referee, although the video assistant referee might not have wanted to get involved with big Tony Taylor in the 94th minute after Anthony's had a tantrum at him. He might not
Cheshire's
have
Anthony Taylor.
He was all right, you know.
Altingham's Anthony Taylor.
He was all right. I'm not involving Big T in this madness. Do you know what I mean? Toad is all right over the course of the 90 minutes. I can't be bothered getting stuck into him. The first bit of you mank bastard, sorry, came on about 85, and I think he'd have took that before the ball was kicked. Altingham's finest. I think he would have took that before a ball was kicked. What's difficult, Ian, with it all is assessing performances of players. That's often what we do on this show. I recently had a bit of feedback, which was, I used to like it when you went through every player. I don't even know where to start doing that with this because of them. Every team that plays them gets to the edge of their box, so you can't really praise us for managing to do that. But every Liverpool player gets to the edge of their box as well in the game. The game also comes in these sections where the events are up to. I find it very, very hard. I genuinely, Liverpool have 15 shots in the first half and I can't particularly tell you who played well, which should not be the case, and yet here we find ourselves.
It's again, just to add to the general weirdness, we've gone there and, as we've said, it's probably the best first half we've ever put in against them.
But I like the one we were 4-0 up. That one was better.
That one was good, yeah. In terms of football and quality over the entire pitch, we were excellent, apart from the fact that the back four weren't necessarily great in our area, the front three weren't great in their area, and there was only one midfielder who was doing sensible things the whole game. But apart from that, we were really good for most of the game. But I don't know how it went. You know, Endo was being caught out all over the place first half, first 20 minutes. And there was the weird shape because Szoboszlai was running the people, but then not doing much. McAllister was obviously being imperious throughout most of it, but it was a very, very odd midfield in terms of they had no midfield and we didn't seem to be overly bothered about doing much with ours.
Yeah, I enjoyed there was a status all today that the referee made more interceptions than the Manchester United midfield too, which I think tells something of a story. We'll try and do it. Josh, McAllister played well again. The issue is that Endo doesn't. I don't even think that's anything that United did. And there was a little bit of them doing what every side's tried to do this season in the first 15. City tried to do it. It goes all the way back to Will Hughes against Crystal Palace, where first 15 people tried to get about Endo and do his head in a little bit and wonder, test him out a little bit. I thought United were doing a little bit of that, but nothing special, nothing different. I just don't think he plays very well. In the way in which sometimes a footballer turns up and he just doesn't play very well that day. I don't think Endo had a good game. I do wonder whether or not he was maybe still carrying whatever the knock was to a degree. I think he's just off it, but yeah, McAllister wasn't, which helped.
Yeah, I think McAllister, I think first 15-20, I felt like he was getting man-marked or something to me, because he grew as the game went on. But he's the kind of player who, you know, amid that chaos, that, you know, in such a pressure cooker as well, he's the lad who you're guaranteed to get cool decisions out of. You're guaranteed to get composure out of McAllister. And, you know, if you're looking at decisions and things like that, he constantly makes the right one. And it was a shame Endo was slightly off it. I mean, did he play in the FA Cup game?
Endo?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because he has a goal to Salah in the first half.
It wasn't his first game at Old Trafford.
Goal to Salah, which was a bit of a turning point.
Strange one. I mean, I don't know how fit he was or whatever, but the alternative was with Curtis Jones, who was also probably just coming back. Gravenberg, similar, so, and Harvey Elliott.
I'll say what I said in the pre, and it really irritated people. Gomez at six.
Yeah.
If you want to get McAllister further forwards, Gomez, when he subs McAllister, so I think Bradley looked knackered, Josh.
Yeah.
So I think Bradley did have to come off, so it's not quite the same thing, but I think Liverpool end up in a situation where they sacrifice McAllister's calm decision-making around their penalty area for him to go and play six because Endo's struggling. But there might have been an argument for 5 minutes with Gomez at six first. Do just get five more minutes out of Bradley and then from there go, okay, this is not, do you know what I mean? Like, because I think that becomes a little bit of an issue, that when you talk about more calm. That said, Elliot, I think, is excellent when he comes on. We'll come on to that in a minute. But I do think that Liverpool could have done with two Alexis McAllisters, basically.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah, a team of them, ideally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think United just have this way about them where they, I think when you play them, it is a bit like the midfield just gets completely bypassed and overlooked, and it gets emptied by the likes of Manu, and even Casemiro is caught well ahead of the ball plenty of times.
He's having a laugh, isn't he?
Yeah, he's nuts, isn't he? Yeah. There was a point last night on Match of the Day where I was watching a Liverpool attack and I was watching him run or attempt to run, and it was like he was...
Saunter, everything is the way in.
Yeah, I mean, I thought... you know, the latter stages of Fabinho was slow, but Casemiro, mate, I didn't realise he was that, you know, stuck in mud when he tries to cover ground. So the midfield was, that's what's frustrating. If you put Arsenal on that pitch,
that's what's frustrating.
The midfield dominates. You know, Odegaard dances around that midfield, and Liverpool just. We had McAllister doing it a little bit, but we didn't really take advantage of it.
Well, Soboslai was dancing around. He was then just doing something mad once he danced.
Yeah.
He was, that bit wasn't the difficult bit. The bit was then on the edge of the penalty area. And this is back to the decision-making point and the weirdness point. And now there's another video for someone else to watch. It could be Arsenal. I think Bournemouth might make mincemeat out of Manchester United on Saturday next week. Genuinely might make mincemeat out of them. It's the 5:30. And I think Bournemouth might get 9, to be honest with you. But then United might get 7, or it might just be 0-0 because nothing makes any sense. Ian, Soboslai progresses the ball well, as I say, moves forward, does a really, really good job carrying it over and over and over again. The issue is then how he uses it.
Yeah, it's there's not, I don't know where I am with Soboslai at the moment. He's not the endlessly creative player we saw the first few weeks of the season. He's obviously gone through that injury period. He's come back. He looks mostly sharp.
I think he's missing Trent.
Possibly. Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. Also, we've been moving them around a bit, haven't we? We've been swapping them from right to left quite a bit. So maybe that change in positions alters them a little bit.
One thing I would say on him yesterday, the shots that he gets, I mean, the execution isn't always great, but the shots he gets, he would have absolutely taken before the game. Klopp would have accepted those shots. They were good shots in good areas. He acts as a vehicle for us as well in terms of carrying the ball from one half to the other half in a lot of moments. And he creates the most chances on the pitch. So I do think he's been relatively off it for the past couple of weeks/months. McAllister has definitely took the spotlight from him. But I don't think he was, like, you know, bad by any means or anything like that. I think he was just, it was just another one of them games where you just kind of get caught up in the chaos a little bit.
It's just, it can just be a game where it just doesn't happen for you.
Thought Salah was intelligent but lacked sharpness through the game, Joel. I think it's understandable in a couple of senses, but we could have done without it. We could have done with him being 100% at the races, I think, if he is Liverpool in the game.
Now, I feel like with Salah, there was a bit of, well, the conversations between mates of mine on the bus yesterday, and even a mate of mine who lives abroad, and I was speaking to him. My mate who lived abroad, I was messaging him. So he's now starting to think like Salah's looking his age. So... is that maybe it's not a conversation for now, but I think it's this, what you've put on your agenda. I think there's still a little bit of rustiness about him, and I think that I can totally understand why he was subbed on Thursday night at 1-1. He may not have understood it because he was certainly far from happy about that, but I felt getting subbed early Thursday, I felt that he went out there yesterday with a point to prove. You know, it was clear as day, and he did for parts, did look it, but I think the lack of match fitness did tell, and has this injury took a lot more out of him than what we could possibly expect, you know, because he's now had, I think, how many starts since New Year's Day? So 3 or 4.
Yeah, that's all.
And
it's his first ever long-term injury, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been the first real bad injury that he's had at
Liverpool. Since the Ramos final. Since the Ramos final.
So, you know, he's...
And it's worth saying he doesn't start 18 absolutely flying. He takes a bit of time to get going into it in the 2018-19 season.
Yeah, because in those opening weeks, Mane was the main driver, wasn't he? And even Sturridge was popping him with a few goals as well. But I think yesterday, obviously he gets the goal, you know, when there was a bit of discourse around the penalty even as well, there was a few people around me saying that, oh, it's got to be given to McAllister. Well, I can understand because of how well he took his penalty against City and in Prague, but Salah is the de facto penalty taker for Liverpool. And I did have to tell one of my mates off, and I won't name and shame him, but basically I heard him say out loud he's going to miss this, and I had to turn around and say, fucking shut up.
Yeah.
It was the worst possible time to say he's going to miss this penalty. I just went, fucking shut up.
Did you feel any of that though? I felt it a bit like...
Maybe a little bit inside, and maybe I was saying a couple of prayers to a deceased family relative, but... to me, man. But I did feel that he was more than likely going to score than miss, basically. Mm. And it was a good pen, it was. When it counted, he got the goal. But, yeah, I do think there's a little bit of a problem with him at the moment, but I just can't put my finger on it. And I think maybe it is the lack of match fitness, but in general, you know... Is there a conversation to be had about his age, about maybe are his abilities waning a little bit, or is he still feeling his way back into things after having that long-term injury? So, you know, it's a bit of a watch this space on him, I think, in the coming weeks, and how he plays between now and the end of the season is going to be one of the big factors between whether we win anything or nothing at all.
Thought Van Dijk and Robertson were excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, just... Robertson's come back and he looks like he's got purpose, he's got speed, and he's actually, you know, he's affecting the game in the way that you want the left backs to do. As good as Joe Gomez has been playing left back, Robertson is a different vehicle altogether down there. And Van Dijk, one point to make about Van Dijk is literally telling Quansah to put the ball back to Kelleher.
Oh, so, he absolutely was, yeah.
So he's telling the players around him what they should be doing. He's managing the situation on the field perfectly. Why Quansah makes the decision he makes is completely beyond me. But, you know, he's a 21-year-old lad who's only come through this season, so no stick for him. But, yeah, Van Dijk's fantastic again. Van Dijk is playing at his highest ever level, I think. He's certainly as good as we've ever seen him. He may be better than we've ever seen him. This may be his best ever season.
Roberts?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was great, genuinely. I felt that, you know, Diaz misses from a Robertson knockdown late on. I felt like... It was going to come from Elliot Gomez or Robertson, as odd as that is, late in the game, is where the three places I thought it was going to come from Liverpool. And that ball, I think, was swung in by Elliot for Robertson to knock it down. Diaz is 8 yards out and sadly doesn't just keep it down, because I think if he does, it's a goal.
Yeah, to be honest, it feels like the past couple of weeks, months, our left side has been a bit blunt, really, as opposed to the right side. And this was one of the games where that wasn't the case. I think we arguably provided more of a threat down our left through Robertson and Diaz than we did through the side where, you know, Salah's there, Szoboszlai's there, Trent is usually there, Bradley we know likes to get forward. So, yeah, it was a nice change in that sense. I think Robertson complements Diaz quite well. But, yeah, just frustrating that I thought Virgil was spot on as well. I mean, leading that back line and things, and for the goals, there's not a great deal he can do about it. So, yes, I mean, Klopp was having a go, I think, actually, about pushing up higher for the Mainoo goal. Something to do with Robertson and Van Dijk dropping too deep or something like that. But I'd have to have a look back at that. But generally, yeah, I think Liverpool were pretty good in that sense.
The subs, Josh, I think Gomez does really well. I think Jones was really good, apart from occasionally mildly surprised by the madness. I thought Gakpo was lively, and I thought Elliot was excellent. The goal four of them brought something to the party, to say the least, which bodes well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, they all made a difference when he came on. I think Gakpo has been a relatively nice surprise over the past week. I think his last two appearances, it's felt like he's on the pitch, and that's important for me. I think of late, he's felt a bit anonymous. He's felt like a bit of a ghost when he's been involved. Not putting himself about enough and covering enough ground. And I think in this game he came on, put himself about certainly, and it felt like he was on the pitch. It felt even more the case a couple of days earlier. Elliot, we feel like, you know, it feels like we've touched on it plenty of times in this podcast, that Elliot makes a difference whenever he gets involved, really. Feels like he's the type of player who does watch the game from the stands, and when he comes on, he's really good at switching the play and things like that, creative in those tight spaces, wins the penalty. So yeah, I mean, we've always had those. We've had them distance makers.
In hindsight, do you wish he'd started?
No. There's something about, I always say, there's something about the Old Trafford pitch that's absolutely massive, and it feels like that was one of the main perks of involving Szoboszlai for me, which is his ability to cover ground, and McAllister covers ground in his mind, so he doesn't need to cover ground with his legs as much. And I was happy with the starting lineup, to be honest. I had no complaints about it. I think Elliott is always a good impact sub, and he proves to be the case again.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say the same, Josh. I think it was the best possible team he could have picked, bar one or two, possibly. You know, maybe there's a question around Konaté and Quanta, but you know, I think we're probably going to come on to it shortly about managing Konaté's fitness, and it is a delicate, you know, situation, because you can see why Quanta started, because obviously Konaté was a bit of a doubt last Sunday for Brighton. So ergo, Konaté got Thursday, Quanta got yesterday, and then we'll see what happens from here on in. But I think in general, the team was the team. You know, I like Elliott when he's coming on as an impact player, even though my granddad doesn't. But you know, with Jones, he's looking like he's getting there. And it's now a question of, when do you start Jones? You know, when do you feel like that he's going to be fully fit to start a game? It could be this Thursday, it could be Sunday against Palace, you know. So that'd be an interesting way to see. Gakpo, yeah, I totally agree. I think he's looking better. I'd like to see Gakpo start Thursday. Again, you know, we'll pick a team for Thursday shortly, but if Gakpo can get a goal or two against Atalanta, then again that's more feeding more confidence into the running, and then hopefully he can transform that as Europa League form into the Premier League for these final set of fixtures.
Yeah, I think the only thing for me about the subs, Case has got dispossessed a couple of times in midfield, which very, very rarely happens, which I think might just illustrate the entire madness of the game, because United did get on a little bit.
I think it was about, like, why are you there?
Yeah,
you shouldn't be there. Fucking hell.
Honest to God, normally he'll run through people and come out with the ball, and yesterday it just didn't happen for him a couple of times, which shocked me, but he came on and again did the sensible things, and that's very much what he's doing at the moment. So, you know, at the moment he's been back for two games, but this season he's doing sensible things. He guards the ball well. I thought Elliott, in the time he was on the pitch, had a shout for man of the match. I thought it was absolutely outstanding. I think it may be, as you said, the watching the game from the stands and assessing what's going on, well, from the bench and assessing what's going on. But when he comes on, he plays in different pockets to everybody else.
Yes.
And he's seeing a different through ball to everybody else. He's also willing to do that slightly hoisted little left foot curve over into the penalty
McAllister loves finding him as well. That's the other thing. McAllister loves finding him, and he loves finding McAllister, and that's not a bad thing ever.
He's an incredibly intelligent footballer, and he does different things to everybody else. If you want the pace, he seems to have added a bit of pace to his game. He's never going to be the quickest footballer on earth, but he seems to have added a bit of pace, but he's always got the dynamism and he doesn't stop moving. So I think he deserves a start. I think Thursday probably does see him. I know we are going to do it in a bit, but I think Thursday probably does see him get a very, very deserved start. But he's tended not to influence the game in the same way when he starts. He's fantastic for impact.
All right, the bigger picture then. We'll start with Liverpool themselves. Joel, something could do with the injured lads back, I think, en masse. I think Jota, Trent Alexander-Arnold, goalkeeper, all three of them getting back and feeling like they're fully involved would be no bad thing. I think, ironically, if there's the possibility of it, a little bit of bicetage as an option between now and the end of the campaign might be no bad thing, so that if you are feeling as though you've got to make a change at six, you're not necessarily moving McAllister back, which I think has come upon us a little bit quickly, but I think that's now where we are. It will be good to start to see a number back in full team training, as the manager refers to it, from today.
Yeah, ideally, because I think yesterday maybe that was a potential sign for why we need them back en masse, because, you know, the lads who've been fit and have got us to this point have been excellent. You know, let's be clear about that. I couldn't have been prouder of the effort that some of these players have put in this season in very difficult circumstances. You know, when you've had to put Joe Gomez in as a six at Forest away, for example, or, you know, relying on kids to come on like Jadon Dans getting a few minutes here and there against Luton and Forest, or you know, James McConnell, for example, getting the odd minute here and there, and then even in the last couple of weeks, you know, players who are playing out of position. Conor Bradley's been brilliant throughout, I couldn't fault him, same with Quanta. But it gets to a point where they can only do so much, and their limitations are told in the most unfortunate set of circumstances. That's not a criticism of them, but it's just the fact that, you know, we've got all these quality players missing who have got the experience and the know-how to get us through certain situations. And, you know, my God, what we could have done with Jota, you know, again at Old Trafford like yesterday, throwing him on with 15 to go to just get us a goal from anywhere, you know, considering the form that he was in up until the injury. between between New Year's Day up until he got injured. Alexander Arnold as well, you know, what we could have done at times for his set piece deliveries, and obviously Alisson is Alisson, you know. And the one thing for me that has really irritated me is the lack of clean sheets, because basically I think had we kept more clean sheets, I'd be a lot more confident about us winning the league. You look at Arsenal, they are keeping a lot of clean sheets, and they've got the best defensive record in the league, and that is why they are where they are at the top of the table. So that to me has been our biggest weakness, really. And I'm really hoping that, as you say, Neil, for this week, if we get a few of these injured players back, ease them back in from, you know, ideally Atalanta, if not Palace on Sunday, and then we go from there.
I think the thing that it gives them first, if he can get them back, Josh, is it just gives him another couple of options. As I said before, you know, he felt he had to move McAllister back. If he's got Bajcetic, if he's got Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's got other options if Endo just has a bit of an off day, if you just want to rest him as the games come thick and fast, if you don't want to rush him back from an injury. But in the end, he has to compromise somewhere else. And this is still a little bit of a minor issue. You know, I think it's began to fray just a tiny little bit, the idea of having to compromise from somewhere else. And then as part of that as well, you then begin to get locked into conversations about the nature of that compromise. You know, for instance, does it feel right now, and it's not simply because of the error made, but does it feel right now as though would we rather have had Konaté for Manchester United or for Sheffield United? And this is, you know, all of this, I think, is just a little bit of a trick that I think is difficult for the, you know, it's been difficult for the manager to keep absolutely nailing over and over and over again. I think just simply having the weight of numbers now, and he's getting closer to it, don't get me wrong, but having the weight of numbers now would help.
Yeah, I must admit, to be honest, that Konaté decision I found a bit curious. That's not one I would have went for. I mean, obviously, I don't have as much information as Klopp does, but I would have done that the other way around, personally. Just because of the nature of Man United, how often we get attacked down their left, our right, by that team. Konaté is a monster at covering ground and dealing with them 1v1 situations. And listen, Kwanzaa did it really well, by the way. And if he doesn't make that mistake, we won't even have this convo. So it's probably not even worth having, because other than that, he was decent. But Konaté felt more suited to me, more, you know, established for that kind of for a game the size of that. But yeah, when it comes to the options, Klopp's proved over the past couple of years, when he's got everyone available, he's a master at using the squad. We've got Europe coming up, so we're going to be playing every 3 days.
I don't think that's a bad thing at this point.
No, well, you can get rhythm, can't you? You can get in that kind of state of momentum.
You can get everyone in rhythm. You can get 18 into rhythm, 20 into rhythm, yeah. If you see what I mean. It's not like it used to be with the Champions League, or when it felt like you only had 14 and you worried about the legs. We'll come on to it in a minute, but he can make 4, 5, 6 changes for Atalanta, and what it'll actually add to is, well, it'll get everyone who could do, like Gravenberg could do with another game. Mm. Elliot could do with a start. Gakpo could do with a start. You can even make an argument around, you know, Gomez could do with, you know, either going back to left back. Maybe you can have a little look at Tsimikas in case you wanted to use him for 20 here and there. If Trent's back, at some point it gives him the opportunity. I think everyone can build with this. I don't think it's a bad thing for us. I think it makes it harder for our rivals, but I think it makes it more straightforward for us.
Yeah, on top of that as well, three of the lads especially were coming back in Jota, Trent and Alisson are just three top footballers. And you're at a point in the season now where Your performances can be so good, but to get the results, you do need players to deliver in certain moments. And if you just boss a football and you're one of the best footballers on the planet, you are more likely to do it yet than someone who's experiencing senior football for the first time this season or something like that. So when you get to this point in the season where, you know, it's the business end, you know, where every single decision is scrutinised, every single point matters, You want your best players on the pitch, and Liverpool are getting to that point now.
That's where, for me, Ian, one of the things that I came back to yesterday leaving the ground was Van Dijk and Robertson really good. If you see what I mean, like Robertson feeling like he's back, he's done well again there. It's another performance where I feel as though he's done well. You know, to me, that's a way home, and that's to Josh's point. The footballers who have been at the very top of the game for a long, long time are hugely useful right now, and we could just do with having a full complement.
Well, the three lads who are hopefully potentially coming back in the next week are all leaders as well. So it's not just the fact that they're fantastic footballers, they're all leaders of that team. They're lads with experience. You can see it over the line by managing the game on the pitch as well, which, you know, no disrespect to the kids who've come through and played, they've been brilliant. but they've played a lot more football than anybody ever expected them to. The fact that they've had to play is putting them to, you know, Bajetic levels of exposure to the possibility of injuries. You know, our overplaying at Bajetic last season basically broke him for a year. So the lads who've come in have done brilliantly, but they should never have needed to. The size of our injury crisis this season has been so big that we've not had that rotation at any point during the season, and that adds to evidence. The fact of where we are at the moment is miraculous given what we've had to go through. So if we can get to a fully fit squad, you know, bar Thiago obviously, for the last few weeks of the season, it's a hell of a place to be in. And it is lads who think while they're on the pitch. The lads who've got the more experience coming back makes all the difference.
So as part of that, Ian, seven to go, they'll probably need to win all seven?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, and I think we're going to. I don't think this changes anything. I still think we'll win the league. I've thought it since August. I'm not going to change my mind now. I think the fact that, you know, again, me and Josh were talking on the way in, Arsenal's running as hard as ours. They don't look like losing at the moment. They don't look like conceding, but they've got a London derby coming up. They've also got Chelsea coming up. They've got United away coming up. Obviously, every one of us, all three of us playing Spurs in this run-in. But I think for Arsenal, Spurs v Arsenal is Man United versus us. It's their
We've got to go to Goodison Park, though.
We've got to go to Goodison Park, but the Blues aren't overly hopeful about what's going to happen on that other than us making our goal difference better.
There is, well, you say that, Ian.
I'm not saying
Fuck
that, they're
off,
saying
Ian.
That. Yeah.
frankly.
I'm not counting that. I'll take a 1-0 win against them.
We'll come back to that in a minute or two, but honestly, I've nearly just ended the show off the back of that, Ian. I'm going to have to look at that one and come back around in a minute or two. All right, Joel. You know, I think there's a couple of things that are happening, and you've got to not get too carried away by one game here and one game there. But it feels to me like, looking at Arsenal, the big difference that I think's changed for Arsenal is that Havertz has massively come to the party, and I've always liked him as a player, and I actually thought he got hard lines from a lot of people earlier in the season. It feels like he's massively come to the party. I think City, they're not massively reliant on De Bruyne, but they're massively reliant on being able to flip between De Bruyne, Foden, one other, and De Bruyne's a big part of that. He's got to stay fit for them. For us, I would argue, if I was doing the Arsenal version of this, I'd be going, Christ, McAllister's come to the party for Liverpool in a big way. Yeah. You've got to bear that in mind as well as we get to this point and move it along. As I say, I think you're in a situation here where there's a reason why it's 71, 71 and 70. It's a reason why you're looking at all of them. It's a reason why, you know, we are where we are. I think toughest run on paper is one thing. As I say, we've got Goodison. I think it's going to be about getting momentum up. And for me, now looking at it, it's all about the next four for Liverpool. They've got three they're going to have. They have Palace, put the European games to one side, and then they've got three away games in a week. And there's loads of room to slip up in those three away games. And we've got to look at the away form this season and say that if there's an area where we need to improve, it's the away form. Liverpool win this or lose this, I think they beat Palace on next Saturday or Sunday. I'm not being complacent about that. They'll have to work hard to do it.
Yeah.
But I think they've got to come out that week with three away wins, and they've got to come out with 9 points.
Yeah, 100%. And in recent seasons, our respective forms at those places has been patchy.
Well, we've beaten Fulham three times this season. We played Fulham three matches.
Yeah.
I know, but this is my point here, is that Arsenal didn't win at Fulham, they got beat at Fulham. I think in a really weird way, Brighton suit Arsenal. I think that Man United might suit Arsenal, but Fulham suit us this season. We played them three times, beat them three times. You've got to look at it that way and go that way on it. I think we've actually got quite a decent record at West Ham in comparison to where West Ham have been in the table, but there's Goodison Park.
Yeah, I was just going to come on to West Ham, that we've won practically all bar one or two there since they've moved to the London Stadium. But Fulham away, from memory, it's obviously, like, you know, the last couple of times we've been here, we haven't won a game at Craven Cottage since Milner scored the penalty there in 2019. And
we won in the League Cup.
Yeah, we got the draw there.
Yeah, we won the tie.
Yeah, basically, yeah, we won the tie. But what I'm saying is, like, I think about the opening game there last season when we were absolutely terrible and got a draw. And then even before that in the COVID season, we were terrible again, got a 1-1 draw. And as I say, like, the record there is patchy. Goodison is Goodison. You know, the amount of times we've had a 0-0 there, I've lost count of them, because it just feels like we go there and draw 0-0 practically every year. And we've only won... I mean, we haven't lost there since 2010. Where's the wood? Right? But we've only won twice there under Klopp. More often than not, the horrible games. They dog it out, we get a 0-0 there, and everyone's coming out there fuming that we haven't battered them because of how crap they are, similar to Man United. So those three games, you are right, Neil, we've got to win them. It's a non-negotiable. Like, we've got to go there and win all three. And the form that we've been in away this season, it's been all right. It's been a lot better than last season. but they've got to win them. And Palace last season was a game that we dropped points in as well at Anfield. So we've got to attack these next few weeks.
What was the centre half partnership?
At Palace at home last season.
Yeah.
It was Nat Phillips and Virgil van Dijk.
It was Nat Phillips. Yeah. Go on.
So, you know, there's even other games where, you know, Tottenham can be kingmakers and all of this, or the Joker in the pack. They've got to play all three of us. Villa go to Arsenal this weekend. We've got to go to Villa Park.
Well timed that, because they've got Lille on Thursday, and that's for Villa. Not quite the bigger game, but it's a massive game for Villa.
Yeah, and if you're a Villa fan, you're dreaming of winning a trophy, aren't you? I know they're in the conversation with top four and they've messed up again on the weekend, but if you're a Villa fan, you're getting carried away, aren't you? You want to win a trophy at the end of the day. So I'd say that was the bigger game for me as a Villa fan if we were doing a Villa version of this. So our running now is just there's all games there that you feel like there's potential booby traps. You know, for example, City play Luton at home on Saturday. That could be any scoreline you like.
Mm.
Whereas with us, that just feels like it's not an option at all. You know what I mean? So I think we. Yeah, I'm repeating myself, so I'm going to stop. We just got to win all seven and then worry about goal difference at the latest eight.
I felt dead optimistic 2 minutes ago.
It's a hell of a week. It's a hell of a week to win three consecutive away games in this league, full stop. It doesn't happen that often. So what they're going to have to do, Josh, now, that's what the dropping points against United, I think, has done, is it's removed. I felt...
The cushion.
Yeah, but also I think I felt there was an argument for the period. You could burn the other two off if they'd have won, say, seven, the first seven on the bounce, because I think that there's a point where Europe happens, maybe either of those two drop points, it becomes hard for them, and they look at it and go, you know what, Liverpool, it just feels a bit too far now. I think that's gone. I think that the opportunity to do that's gone with this result. But I also think that the other part of this is that they now have given themselves, I think, until... You can reassess it, I think, after these four games. And maybe we'll have another little bit of a cushion somewhere, maybe. But I think that realistically now, I think they've now got to win all seven.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think City are going to win all of theirs. And I think Arsenal... I'm not sure how many Arsenal are going to win, right? But they are a joke, you know. They are a serious team, mate. And I've been saying it for ages now. It feels like people are starting to click on finally that they are a seriously good team. And people that have been inclined to look at like what they've been in the past, previous seasons, bottling it, whatever, they are a really, really good side and they're conceding absolutely nothing. So if they go and win the league, if they go and, you know, I mean, they deserve it, put it that way, that they've got a tough run. They've got, still in Europe, potentially got a two-legger with City. So I think the thing with Arsenal, despite them being arguably, I think, probably the best coach team in the league at the minute, is that intangible stuff of getting to like four games away from champions, you've got a lead, it's 0-0 after like 50 minutes or something like that. I mean, they haven't won a Premier League since 2004, is it?
Yeah, 20 years.
You know, that's, it can't not like play some kind of part. I mean, even City past previous years, I think they go behind against Brighton final day.
Yeah,
they go two down against Villa final day at home, was it?
Yeah, it was at the Etihad. Yeah.
You know, so that's Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, treble winners, season champions. With Arsenal, despite them being outrageous, it does feel like with them games especially, they could impact things. And seven games to go is still, there's still plenty of room there for just the randomness of football to have some kind of an impact on all three teams. But
what I'd say what they need, Josh, is a similar game to what happened at Anfield last season, where they go 2-0 up, looks very easy, and then they get complacent.
Yeah, they need a wobble.
Like that, where they concede a big lead, whether it's against Tottenham or even a Wolves in a couple of weeks.
Even just conceding first.
Don't put any faith in Wolves. Wolves are finished.
Even just conceding first. Like they haven't conceded first for ages. I think I saw a stat right. I think 2024, I'm not even sure they've been behind once. And if they have, it's like you're talking like 10 minutes. I'm sure I've seen that. So they haven't had that kind of... that seed of doubt in the head whatsoever, and we just kind of need something like that to happen. But five clean sheets on the bounce now, it's the best in the Premier League for years and years, I think, since that's happened. I think 2005 might have been the last time that happened. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. But Liverpool have just got to do their job and hope that they can keep... I think keeping the lead over City is the main thing, and then second, just hope Arsenal have some sort of hurdle that they've got to jump in the next seven, at least one, you know, but hopefully a few of them.
Pick me a team for Atalanta. Anyone? Any takers?
Go on, I'll go for it.
Go on.
I'd start Gakpo, give Nunes a rest, have him firing for Palace. There's a conversation around Jones to be had.
Yeah.
Depending on if he's fully fit, I'd go Jones, Elliot. But where do you play Elliot? You know, do you give Salah the night off? Do you put him on the bench in case of emergency and put Elliot further forward, or put him in the middle? Maybe after Endo's performance yesterday, you know, there's a conversation to be had over him. I'm not so sure.
Defense, surely you just ask Endo to go again.
You go Konate in defence, I think.
But then you want Konate for Palace. And to go to the Konate management point, Joel, this is where if you decide that you're doing Konate for 90 against Atalanta, the last thing I want is to look at a team sheet next Sunday and go, fucking hell, he's not started Konate again because he did 90 midweek. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? This is where.
I'm just going off the logic of the fact that it's being like Kwanzaa, then Konate, then Kwanzaa.
Yeah, but I want Konate playing league games.
I want him playing league games as well because I think he's more important.
So what do you do? Because he's done in the past, he could do Kwanzaa and he could do 45-45 with Van Dijk and Konate.
I was going to say that.
Well, I'd say that maybe Kwanzaa and Konate. I'd go that maybe Thursday if you're wanting to sign this Van Dijk. I know we've still got
45-45.
Yeah, Atalanta is still going to be tough. You know, I'm not writing them off by any sense. But just
they're really good sides.
The
sixth in Italy. They're not mugs. They won 3-0 at Napoli recently. They're not mugs. But what I don't want is to look at a team sheet next Sunday or to have the rumours come out beforehand. Oh, he's not starting Konate. Honestly, that can fuck off.
Yeah.
So he's got what I want him to do is do whatever it does. That means Konate starts against Palace. You know what I mean? That's it. That's the priorities. Whatever I want him to do, whatever that answer is, to be honest with you. Konate, all the way through the season, I found it a little bit odd. I've kept thinking to myself, well, it'll be because he's going to come to the fore at the end of the campaign. But now it is the end of the campaign, and he's got to play league games.
Yeah,
he can't keep playing fucking midweeks, apart from against Everton, when he definitely plays.
I think left back, I'd go Gomez, maybe. You know, if there's a bit of Ryan Robertson, you know, or Tsimikas, as you mentioned before. And then further forwards, I'm not too sure that wide left. I'll pass that on to someone else.
Do you not think he just goes?
That's a fair bit of rotation.
I wonder whether
I say 4-5 changes tops. Yeah. I think we can get away with that.
Do you think? I wonder if he's going to go stronger because that is the way it ends up. Why you think that will irritate me genuinely? No matter what he fucking does, is if he starts Konate in this one and then Konate doesn't start against Palace, that's the only thing that he can do that's going to do my head in.
Yeah.
But I think he will make a couple of changes minimum. By one, like for instance, I think Salah's starting. I'd be really surprised if Salah doesn't start the first leg of the European quarterfinal.
Same with Virgil for me as well. I think Virgil's a shoo-in. But I think you want to rotate. I think there's certain players that you can bring in and hope that the overall level of the team doesn't drop at all. Like if Gakpo gets involved and he actually plays like the Gakpo we know he can be, we'll be fine. You know, there's no dip in quality there at all. So I think I bring Gakpo in and hope that he brings forward the two kind of substitute appearances that he's had and puts it into a 490 performance.
Elliot and Jones?
Yeah, I wouldn't be too against that. But I mean, just play McAllister.
I'd go Endo, Elliot, Jones.
So you give McAllister
the game off? I would give McAllister the game off the basis of the fact that you might, from that point onwards, be asking him to play every game.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're playing a semi-final of the Europa League, I think you're picking your first 11. I think if you're playing Everton midweek, you're picking your first 11. Mm. If you don't want me to knock around to your house in Freshfield. I think I think that when I say your first 11, you might make two or three changes, but you're making them around the idea of the team to get the results, if you sort of know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is the last one where there's any degree of leeway. So I think it's your last one where I think you can say to McAllister, you're not going to start this one. We'll have you on the bench in case we need you, and we'll go from there. I think it's your last time to get to say that to one or two of the others. But like you, I just think you start Van Dijk and Salah anyway, and maybe you look at them for the away game, because that could be your other one if you get a good result in the first one. And then also you got the idea of maybe having Trent off the bench.
Yeah, this is a man market team as well, by the way, Atalanta. So, you know, you can kind of, you know how they're going to press. You can entice them in. If you've got Virgil doing them diagonal switches, you're probably going Salah on the pitch to receive them and get in on the back line. So, and I think with Salah as well and Endo, going back to the points that we made earlier, you could argue both of them need a bit more rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, they're both, Endo as well, you know, they never get injured, neither of them. So you can probably give them another run out and hope that they get a bit of momentum behind them.
I do apologise. What I forgot to say about Salah before as well, and I naively forgot, is the fact that he's been fasting for a month. That can be a big factor in why, like, there was a little bit of discourse around Salah yesterday, maybe. So, yeah, I do apologise.
Could also link into the Konate thing.
Yeah, because obviously at the Sheffield United game, they got to break the fast in the middle of the game. Yeah. And there was no way that was happening at United, was it?
Because the sun doesn't go down.
Yeah. Bradley, Kwanzaa, Van Dijk, Gomez, Endo, Elliot, Jones, Salah, Gakpo, Diaz.
I think that you might well be very, very close to the team. Think, Trent, are we all hopeful that we get 20 minutes of Trent off the bench?
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
And hopefully, Jota's back in training this week, isn't he? So
that's the talk, but you never know. If so,
maybe just the last 10 minutes for Jota.
And go from there. All right, I like Ian's team there. Seemed about right as far as I'm concerned.
I didn't pick a goalie.
I presume you're picking Kelleher.
Yeah.
I presume you're picking Kelleher, and we'll go from there. All right, thank you very much indeed, Sam Walker-Dine, for enjoying it from an Arsenal perspective behind the camera, and to Keaton, for producing the sounds as we go all the way through it. Ian Salmon, Joel Richards, and Josh Williams. It has been the Anfield Wrap after Liverpool got beat 2-2 by Manchester United. Honestly, I'm just pleased we haven't got to play them again, because my head was absolutely fried yesterday. Nothing is lost. Liverpool just now need to win 7 league games. Sports Social Podcast Network.